This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, December 10th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. Over the past 2 years, a small group of radical Republicans has pushed Congress to the right, forcing out House Speaker John Boehner and replacing him with Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Ryan spoke last week at the Library of Congress.
So if we want to save the country, if we want to do what we believe in, then we need a mandate from the people. And if we want a mandate, then we need to offer ideas. And if we want to offer ideas, then we need to actually have ideas. That's where the House Republicans come in. So our number one goal for next year is to put together a complete alternative to the left's agenda.
Ryan Lissa joins me to discuss the divisions within the Republican Party and what they mean for the country. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Dorothy.
You know, we've been here before.
I hate to say it.
Yeah, for several years. Going back to 2009 with the rise of the Tea Party.
That's right.
Just a few months ago, a few dozen Republican congressmen managed to orchestrate the removal of Speaker of the House John Boehner, even though he had helped to create the largest Republican majority since 1928. So what is going on?
It's interesting that you said we've been here before talking about the rise of the Tea Party since 2009. I do feel like almost everything we've been discussing in politics is still related to the fallout from 1 2-year period, the 2009-2010 period when Obama was first president and had large Democratic majorities in the House and Senate and passed the most aggressive domestic agenda since LBJ, and almost everything in our politics, at least in Washington, since then has been about the fallout from that era and the sort of response from the Republican Party.
And yet Boehner didn't believe they'd do it. It was interesting. You know, this summer when North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows first filed the parliamentary move to vacate the chair, Boehner said, as you wrote in a piece for the magazine this week, you've got a member here and a member there who are off the reservation. No big deal. I mean, that's kind of amazing that he didn't.
Yeah, and so the division really, it's two things. It's obviously ideological, but even more than ideological, because these rebels that we write about and that eventually organized themselves earlier this year into something called the House Freedom Caucus, the disagreements on policy are not that big. I think at the end of the day, Boehner and the rebels would all agree they want to get rid of Obamacare. They want to cut the government as much as they want. Now, you know, Boehner might be a little bit more moderate on some of those issues, but at the end of the day, they do agree about the big policy goals. But a lot of the fighting was about the tactics you use to accomplish that. And that's where they saw Boehner as someone who just didn't get it and was sort of too old school. As Raul Labrador, one of the organizers of the House Freedom Caucus, told me, you know, he would have been a good 20th century speaker, but not such a good 21st century speaker. And the big cleavage in Labrador's view was over one's understanding of Obama. In the House Freedom Caucus view, Obama is so radical and wants to transform the country so much that only people who agree to the most extreme tactics are true conservatives. And that's where the sort of disagreement really started.
But Ryan, they kept winning against Boehner. I mean, am I wrong?
Their biggest victory really is his ouster and the elevation of Paul Ryan, who so far is giving in to a lot of their demands about reorganizing the House and making it more small D Democratic, which in their view will give them more power. That is the backbench members, these radicals in the Freedom Caucus.
So yeah, someday you'll explain why that's more Democratic, but keep going.
Yeah, that's probably their biggest victory. But, you know, look, they shut down the government in 2013. That didn't get them anything. They argue, I think persuasively, that, hey, they shut down the government in 2013. The voters sort of forgave the Republican Party. In 2014, the House Republicans expanded their majority and they took back the Senate. So it couldn't have been that bad politically for the Republican Party. And there's some credence to that view.
Well, and now they're threatening to shut down the government again.
Yeah, and so these things just are now an annual part of congressional fights, and sometimes more than annual. In early 2015, when Obama went ahead with his executive actions on immigration, the Freedom Caucus pushed Boehner to try and shut down the government and then tried to push him to shut down the Department of Homeland Security. That strategy backfired. They finally got so frustrated with Boehner that he wouldn't agree to their tactics that they decided to force a vote to push him out, and of course he resigned. And after a scramble to find a replacement, everyone settled on Paul Ryan. Fast forward to this week, and Paul Ryan is now right back in the same position that Boehner has been in every year over these annual funding bills. Do you just fund the government after a sort of nice compromise where the White House gets some stuff and Republicans get some stuff? Or do you push for something much more radical, like defunding Obamacare or stopping the funding of Planned Parenthood or something else that you know Obama will veto and will cause a government shutdown? And that's where we are as we, you know, sit and record this on Thursday.
And where is Paul Ryan in this debate? How is he going to avoid the same fate as Boehner?
Most of the observers on Capitol Hill believe that, as you see from the papers, there's not too much talk of a government shutdown coming. I still think there's at least a chance. Friday's the deadline, right? They're supposed to
tomorrow
have these funding bills signed onto Obama's desk, because the funding for the government runs out on Friday. All week they have scrambled to come up with a deal, and they couldn't do it. And so on Friday they're going to give themselves a five-day extension.
Just to be clear, the issues this time are funding of Planned Parenthood and what else?
This, what they call omnibus bill, funds the entire government in one giant package. No matter what wing of the party you're from, Democrat or Republican, this is your chance to try and attach some of your favored policy. They often call it a Christmas tree, and every member tries to attach an ornament. And there are about 40 so-called riders that various factions within both parties want to attach. Some of them maybe not so controversial, but a lot of them are. The big ones that the Freedom Caucus and the sort of radicals that are often the subject, they care about two things. They care about something on abortion, whether it's full defunding of Planned Parenthood or maybe something short of that, and they care about attaching something to do with the Syrian refugees. Anything on abortion would almost certainly cause the Democrats to abandon support for the legislation, and probably you'd get a veto threat from Obama. On the Syrian refugees, depending on what it is, that could be attached and attract Democratic votes, and then Obama would have a tough decision to make about whether he would support the overall package or veto it and possibly cause a government shutdown. So Paul Ryan is in this same spot that Boehner was always in. He's sort of caught between Obama's veto pen and the House Freedom Caucus. He wants to be able to put something on the House floor that attracts a majority of 218 Republicans.
Right. You mentioned in the piece, one of the most interesting parts were your interviews with conservative critics of the Freedom Caucus. And they told you that what they're doing is empowering Democrats, not Republicans.
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating dynamics, is that there's a member named Tom McClintock, who, very conservative guy from California, and he was one of the early members of the Freedom Caucus, which formed in January. And in September, he decided he had had enough, and he resigned from the group because he decided what it was doing was that it was empowering Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. The whole point of the Freedom Caucus is to vote against the leadership, to thwart leadership's priorities when the Freedom Caucus believes those priorities are not conservative enough. Well, a band of moderate Republicans decided, hey, we can do that too. We'll vote against the leadership and join with Democrats, and we'll support a piece of legislation that we think is good, even though it doesn't have full Republican support. And they did this with something called the Export-Import Bank. So it was a big fight over a government program. Moderates liked it. Conservative Republicans hated it. And the moderates said, you know what, the Freedom Caucus wants to buck leadership. We'll do the same thing. And they joined with Democrats and forced a vote on this issue.
Who won?
The Democrats and the moderates won and actually passed this thing and crushed a big conservative priority. Tom McClintock, the former Freedom Caucus member, said this is opening a Pandora's box, because what if those same moderates join with Democrats and pass immigration reform? What if they pass any number of things that actually has a bipartisan majority in the House and is only being bottled up because of the power of the Speaker and conservatives?
And what do you think the chances are of that?
Well, it actually did happen with the Export-Import Bank. It was slightly unique circumstances, because that was right after Boehner had resigned, and so there was this sort of weird lame duck period where the moderates thought, okay, we can buck Boehner here, and frankly, Boehner actually supported passage of the Export-Import Bank, so it was a unique circumstance. This week, it was tried again. The Democrats tried to force a vote on gun legislation. The legislation actually is sponsored by Republican. But so far, It hasn't attracted enough of the moderate Republicans to force a vote on the floor, but it's definitely something to watch. I mean, the idea is that the Freedom Caucus has decided to break the tradition of always supporting the majority on so-called rules votes, and that once you open that Pandora's box, you could have any number of coalitions inside the House doing the same thing, and then the House is no longer run as strictly a majoritarian institution where the Republican speaker or the Democratic speaker, whatever the case may be, is the king. And so that's the thing that guys like McClintock have warned about and argue that the Freedom Caucus is opening this Pandora's box.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
So back to Donald Trump and his
every
influence.
Every political conversation eventually leads there.
And it's totally apropos here. This is in the category of be careful what you wish for. We all know that Donald Trump made these horrendous comments calling for a moratorium on Muslim immigration. This week, Paul Ryan was forced to issue a very blunt statement in response. He said, "This is not conservatism. What was proposed yesterday is not what this party stands for." So again, he's in this seemingly impossible bind.
He really is. And a nice Paul Ryan, who really just cares about policy, and he was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and he was so excited to do tax reform on the Ways and Means Committee and hoping for a Republican president where he could sort of dig into his conservative policy agenda and dig into the tax code. That was his plan for the next few years. And of course, instead, he's been thrust into this really impossible job of being Speaker of the House, where not only does he have to deal with all the rebels in his own conference who have given him a very short honeymoon, but clearly one that won't last.
But Ryan, he knew what he was getting himself in for. He thought long and hard. He negotiated. At the top of the program, we heard him talking about spending the next year developing new ideas to counter the left. What's he talking about? What new ideas?
To be honest, I don't think that's actually what he's going to do. I think what he's going to do is, once there's a Republican nominee, he's going to keep Congress out of the election as much as possible. But I think when the House Republicans are in the news, it's usually not for good reasons.
Their ratings plummet once again.
Their ratings are in the single digits. I mean, their approval ratings are just abysmal. So I doubt he's going to be a big player. But he has said that he wants to be more of a Republican communicator than Boehner was. You know, he wants to try and elevate the mainstream Republican agenda, which, you know, is the usual stuff on tax cuts and a more sort of foreign policy. Ryan is pretty much in line with the views of someone like Marco Rubio, say.
And he has presidential ambitions of his own still, I assume.
I assume. He always, like anyone who actually has ambitions, he always denies it. But he's young enough to be able to think about running again. But boy, being Speaker of the House has got to be the worst platform to run for president from. He's going to have so many difficult votes that he's going to have to deal with. It's just a recipe for making yourself unpopular with the right wing, because being Speaker of the House means you're constantly compromising, you're constantly putting legislation on the floor that is imperfect, and in the current climate in the Republican Party, that doesn't help you spring to the presidency.
Okay, thanks so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Ryan Lissa is the magazine's Washington correspondent. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.
You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts in the iTunes Store. The weekly audio edition of The New Yorker is available at audible.com. This podcast is produced by Jill Duboff and Alex Barron of NewYorker.com.